This is the MLWRadio.com network.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network, as well as on cagematch.net. We're back. I'm your host, Striga. He is my co-host, Dylan. And we are going to talk about the G1 Climax again, Dylan.
That's right. This is the era we're in right now, even though it's coming to an end soon.
Yes. So, very
soon. We're in the final road, but you know, lots of stuff going on, and wrestling, in Japan, in life. I mean, we had the Women's World Cup. Shout out to both China and the Philippines for getting their first wins ever in the history of the World Cup. And then getting obliterated promptly in the next matchup, as you would expect, those sorts of teams.
Well, Germany obliterated Morocco and then lost to Colombia in the last second of the game. That was weird, too.
Did they advance?
Not yet. They still have one match left.
Oh, okay. Oh, so let's go for Germany now. Like I said, the Asians had the most heart, but we didn't advance, unfortunately.
Unfortunately,
The U.S. did advance with two draws, but a lot of people weren't happy about that. The women's team is always a controversial subject because the men's team is like a comical excuse for football, but the women's team is actually good in the U.S. Like they've won the title like the last two times, I think, the cup, to be honest. So they have high expectations upon them. They have the burden of high expectations. Like if the men had two draws and a win, they would be hailed as legends. But for the women, everybody wants to just blow everybody out. So that's the thing. I know Ken is very heavily, Grandpa Ken is very invested in this World Cup going on there. He has high hopes.
Yeah, the last five winners of the World Cup, actually 2003 and 2007, Germany, 2011, Japan, 2015 and 2019, United States. So there's a nice sandwich around Japan.
Yeah, this is our zone right now. Yeah, the Women's World Cup. This is like we got to represent right now. So we have to do it for the ladies in the World Cup right now. And hopefully both of our nations advance going on there. And hopefully we get some good advancements into the G1 that we're going to be talking about.
Yes, you were saying that the G1 Climax is coming to an end very soon. At this point that we're recording, we have... actually, how many shows do we have? Seven shows left in this tournament right now. But fear not, there is going to be another tournament. Dylan, you and Dr. Jonathan, you did a show on the N1 Victory. That tournament is about to start as well on the weekend in Yokohama Budokan on August 6th and running all the way through September 3. So that's going to be happening after at least at the end of the G1 and then after the G1 ends. And you did a full preview on that tournament. Pick'em, I think you did with Jonathan.
So, yeah, shots fired at Dean, who was also there. All three of us were on that show.
I hadn't read carefully, actually, to be quite honest.
We all three did one, and we picked every single match of the tournament. Dr. Jonathan, he'll be there at some of those shows. He's going to Japan next month. So I've always been feeling this. Like a lot of people... I've been in the Japan sphere around me lately. It's very interesting. I feel like God's trying to tell me something.
I've also listened to Yannick tell his side of the story of his Japanese trip.
That was on the Patreon.
Yeah. Listened to him on Straight Wrestling as well. So.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, he had the German version. Oh mm-hmm. yeah,
Okay. Exactly, yes. Yes, but for now we are going to talk about three tournaments that are going on at the moment, Dylan. Quick update here on the five-star Grand Prix. From your side, there have been two more shows with five matches in the tournament, as I'm looking right now on the 29th and on the 30th of July. What can you say about these two shows?
Yeah, they were super minor. Me and Sandre covered them on the Patreon in greater depth, but I'll just briefly talk about them. But again, they were minor shows anyway. Unlike, it should be like how the G1 does it, in my opinion, just in terms of scheduling. I know that's a hot take right now, where every show has matches. But now we're getting to a spot where people are off and on. So it's like the 29th show had three matches and the 30th had two. And basically, the long story short of it is the two best matches were on the 30th and the three worst ones were on the 29th. but none of them were super great. The 29th had, let's take a look here. Oh, both of these two, it's worth mentioning that they were in very small buildings.
Yeah.
Here. The 29th was on Nagano. There was like 300 people there. Julian Hanan was a fine match. Like, I thought the thing is, just watch the 23rd show, which is much better than both of them. It features everybody. That would be my first recommendation. But this was fine. Julia beat Hanan. It was very, one side. They tried to do some back and forth. It didn't really work as well as the 23rd one with Hanan, where her match was very fast paced. This one was drug out a little bit more. Sariano and Mariah May had another match. Ano took some very violent bumps in this match. She's been one of the standout players so far. Fine match. Again, the crowd on 29th, especially more than the 30th, was just super dead as well. So keep that in mind if you're going to watch it. Mina Shikara Mirai was the main event, and it was a good match. Not nearly as good as the one they had last year, though. They were faced in the tournament last year and had an exceptional match. This one was only good and probably the best of the night, but not again. I liked Mirai's match on the second night versus Hanan even a little bit better, which I thought was really good. Actually, both great pairings with each other. They worked so well. Great chemistry. Mirai always works well with people who have like legit backgrounds, and Hanan's a former judoka, so. That was a good match, and the main event was Natsu Poi and Suzu Suzuki, which was another really good match, I thought. Nothing that's going to blow you away, but worth watching, I would say. Both of the 30th match are, and if you've got time, check out the Shirakawa Mirai match on 29th. And we did see Megan Bain for the first time, too, in the multi-man matches. I mean, great presence, great power.
Yep.
The matches aren't going to, like, for these are not meant to even be super special, but she looked good as you can expect for someone of her level in that way. So hopefully she does good in the title match. But yeah, two smaller shows.
Yeah, much like you said before the tournament, this tournament could probably suffer the fate of the G1 Climax setup last year, with a long tournament and long layoffs for some of the wrestlers. So it's going to be really difficult and hard to keep everything in mind and follow the tournament. I mean, this is going to run until September 30th. So we're just at the very beginning of this.
And they're already messing things up. I mean, Mirai's already got three matches, and there's some people with only one. You know, most of them only have one. So it's like, we're already getting into weird territory. And on top of it, you had the injury, so that's going to also mess things up even more. So it's like everything is already looking a little shaky in terms of the scheduling format. But like I said, it's not like these matches were bad. It's just the 29th. It was a really dead atmosphere in a smaller show, and the matches were okay, but not spectacular. The 30th was definitely better, I would say, of the two. That was in Saitama, but still a small arena, not a big one there. But it was still better, and, like I said, the quality of talent is so high, there's nothing they can do to really mess it up that much. Like, that's the difference between this and the G1, is the G1 has all these guys that don't really add a lot in them, and the Stardom one, pretty much everybody's good in there outside of, two people, I would say, and maybe even just one, considering where we were at. So it's going to be interesting. It's a good tournament very early on.
Yes, so that's the one Yoshi tournament. Another Yoshi tournament that is going on right now is the Tokyo Princess Cup, over the weekend, I was able to catch up with all the matches that happened so far. The tournament started out with a couple of shows, four actually, in the KFC Hall in Tokyo. They had a setup with two tournament matches each and some undercard stuff on these shows. First one was Moka Miyamoto upsetting Hyper Misao, and then Mio Yamashita defeating the champion, Misuki, in the first round. Pretty good match, but not like a match that you'd expect from these two. Not like a standout match. It was just a bit slow at points as well, I thought. Not the best match that these two had. Then we had Shoko Nakajima defeating Suzume. I really like that one. I thought that was one of the better matches of the first round. Probably the best. And Rika Tatsumi beat Raku in another pretty good match. These two probably one of the better matches of the first round. Then we had Yuki Kamifuku defeating Nao Kakuta. And Mio Watanabe defeating Yuki Aino. The Kamifuku and Kakuta match was pretty solid. The Mio Watanabe and Yuki Aino match bit better than that, although these didn't stand out in any way either. And this finished off on the 22nd of July with two more matches. Aiso Endo defeated Mahiro Kiryu. Okay stuff. Yuki Arai defeated Hikari Noah. This one was better. I really liked the back and forth between Arai and Hikari Noah in this match. And Arai then won this one. And that led us to the quarterfinal show on the 29th, which I thought was one of the best top ends of a TJPW card that I can remember in the last couple of years, because I thought that every match pretty much hit. Dylan, what do you think about this tournament so far?
You know, it's been, to me, none of the matches really stuck out until the last show. And particularly the main event, I thought was really strong.
Yeah, great match.
Yeah, with Tatsumi versus Shoko in there. I thought that was like, whenever they're in a weird place or they need someone to have a big match, Tatsumi is always the one that delivers. You know, like most, I would say. She's been to
White me, Dragon of, is always here.
And she's been kind of the MVP of the whole company as well. You know, Yamashita did get the win over Mizuki as well earlier on, like you mentioned, and that was pretty good. There's a lot of pretty good stuff, but you know, I wouldn't come to this if you're expecting great wrestling up and down. And they didn't even formulate it. I mean, listen, you know, Yuki Arai and Kamifuku are in the quarter, the semifinals. Mm-hmm. Like, that tells you that they're not aiming for a work rate tournament. And then, you know,
I got to say, though, much like I said, this top end of the 29th card, I thought was really, really strong. And I thought that Yuki Arai really showed up for a match. Of course, Arisu Endo is just exceptionally good for her level of experience and was able to put together a really good match with Yuki Arai. I really liked Arai's strikes in this match. Arisu Endo's attempts of the camel clutch were really good too. So this was good. One of the better matches of this was also Yuki Kamifuku defeating Mio Watanabe. They previewed that with some tags where Mio Watanabe already sold the fame as so like she was dead, and she once again did in this one. The fame as can be a really goofy move, but for Yuki Kamifuku, it totally works in this environment of TJPW, because she's one of the, I think she is the tallest in this company, the tallest woman in this company, and it looks almost effortless that she's able to just hit this move on anyone on the roster. So once again, it happened there. Mio Yamashita defeated Moka Miyamoto, and this one was one of the matches that really stood out to me. Except for the main event. I think this was my second favorite match besides the main event match. I said it on Twitter. This is one of the bigger criticisms of TJPW, that it's hard for people to really get invested with the product, because few stuff really looks like it really hurts. Few of the wrestlers look like they could really hurt each other. And I think that Moka Miyamoto can be an embodiment of that, because she's very tiny and her offense in a lot of situations looks very light. I thought that the beginning of the match was really an embodiment of that. It looked really light what she was going to do with Yamashita, but as the match progressed, I thought that she got into the match better and better, showed more intensity. Miho gave Moka Miyamoto a lot, and it developed to be a really, really good match. Certainly one of the standout matches of Miyamoto's career so far.
Yeah. Another issue is that she is actually, like, legit. She's, like, a karate player. And I've said this before, a lot of times when martial artists come into wrestling, they sometimes suffer the most, like, when it comes to making stuff look real, because they're always afraid to, like, hit as hard as they can, because they know they can be dangerous.
Well, one great exception to that is Tyson Miyaguchi, because he literally fucked himself up on the Gunpowder Pro Show.
Well, he listen, the Sato school of training goes a different way. The hard hit school is totally different at the end of the day. But yeah, that was pretty good. You know, Moka, I've always liked her style. I thought she had something a little bit different overall. I mean, of everybody, she wouldn't be the one I would point to be honest, for that criticism, like, compared to Kamifuku and Arai. I mean, Arai's finisher on Endo was, like, comically bad, I thought. So it's tough. I mean, I thought the first two matches were kind of bad, honestly. Like, Arai and Endo and Kamifuku and Miho, I didn't really get a lot out of those, but the last two I thought improved for sure. And obviously someone like, again, you're getting Miho, Yamashita, and Rika in there, like, their two best workers, like, not coincidentally have the best matches, I would say. But I'm not into these semifinals at the end of the day. And even then, even without those two, where right now Mizuki's reign is so cold.
Yeah, really cold, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
to be quite honest, they didn't really gave her a lot to get a good reign going. Like, there is really nothing that this company is going for it right now.
I mean, look at the attendance for that show.
Less than 500 in Kurikan, that's not good.
Yeah, they almost dropped below 400. So, like, that's, you know, it kind of tells you where they're at right now. Like you said, though, it's, you can't blame Mizuki, but also, I mean, that's how it goes a lot of times in wrestling. Like, the booking is always the most important thing when you think about it overall. Like, you know, like you said, they didn't really give her a lot of great opponents. They're hopefully building to that. I think most people think Miho is going to win.
Yeah.
And it's like the natural story is, like, that's kind of her deal for historically, is that she struggles in tournaments. She's always, she always loses. But now she has a chance to win. They've told a multi-year story to build to that as well, which I do like. And obviously I like her. She's the best in-ring person in the company. Like me, if you're just talking purely, like, her skills, like, pretty much, she's the best one. So she can get the best matches out of Mizuki if you want. But, I mean, the problem is though, she's a great worker who also just so happens should not be the champion. So so it's like, it's a difficult place to be in. And Tatsumi's the other great worker, but she's already the secondary champion. So it doesn't make a lot of sense for her to win. And the other two I have zero interest in seeing. But I could see Arai getting the win, actually, if they wanted to go that route.
So we're going to wait another year for Miho to actually make it, or is she ever going to make it?
Well, the thing is, if she, let's say she wins this, what else does she have to do?
That's it, pretty much.
Exactly. I mean, and I'm sure that there is part of her that is probably, I mean, we've already seen her take months off in America before, just this year. You know, Sakazaki's going to leave, you know, at the end of the year. There may be a part of her that wants to take that risk as well, but I don't see much of a future in America either for her. So it's like, it's a weird spot right now.
Yeah.
That she's in. But like I said, but the company needs a spark, though. I kind of feel similar to how I felt about DDT when they put Brooks over, and that obviously has worked out really well so far. They actually did a great number
recently. One of the best numbers in Kurikan in a long, long time, actually.
Yeah, so sometimes it's good just to make change, like get a spark for the company, because I don't know if going back to the OGs again is the answer. I'm not a fan of Yuki Arise at all. At all as a wrestler. I think she's very, very poor. There's no nice way to describe her skill level in the ring. But she is an idol and has a fan base, and that's what the company is probably going to care about most. So
If they want to make her look good, I mean, she has one of the best in Miho Yamashita in the semifinals. Then I'd expect Rika Tatsumi to beat Kamifuku. I would expect her to have a chance to go into the finals, because if you have Yuki Arai in the final, you really want a strong wrestler to face her, to make her look good once again, and that would be Rika.
And you take, you know, to me, Endo is not that far away from those two. She hasn't had the opportunities, but in terms of just a skill level, she is near the top of the heap in the company in terms of wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've basically formulated the tournament perfectly to where, like you said, she basically gets to face all the best wrestlers to make her look better than she really is as she goes to the final, if they wanted to do that. But I think Miyu will win ultimately, because this company always kind of does the same stuff over and over.
Yes, they do.
So I do think Miyu will actually win. That'll build to Wrestle Princess with Miyu versus Mizuki, which should be a good match. And I like I said, I don't think Miyu should win the title if that happens.
I think Mizuki will get a strong victory once again to not only have beaten Yuka Sakazaki. If she needs it, not only have beaten Yuka Sakazaki, but also Miyu Yamashita. They really need to put her over strong, because much like you said, Sakazaki's gone. Miyu Yamashita dipped her feet into US wrestling as well. You really need a strong champion in Mizuki.
But the thing is like, this reign is basically a carbon copy of what happened last year with Shoko as champion, where it's a really cold, like there's not a lot of great matches to write in. I wouldn't be opposed if they wanted to try something radically different, because I do think they need that. Just in general, I don't think what they're doing is very successful at the moment. Not even just about attendance or whatever. Just in terms of interest, I think they've really taken a step back.
They're very low. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the last 2 years, like when Ito won the Princess Cup a couple of years ago, that felt like kind of like the peak of the company almost in terms of just people talking about it and wanting to check it out. And then last year, you still had a lot going on with Watanabe. A lot of people were very invested in that.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I don't... Yeah.
Yeah, she's taken a step back too. Lost the secondary title, the International Princess title, to her tag partner. And ever since, she's only like a part of the undercards usually.
Yeah, that's kind of her role. I mean, she was always a mid-card player, like at the end of the day. Like but
that's very unfortunate, because like you said, she really had a lot going for her last year. I thought that fan interest was really up with her winning the Princess Cup.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like last year, you had a lot of people very interested in her. This year, I don't get that same buzz about any of these people that we have here in this tournament. Even though, you know, everybody likes Yamashita, everybody likes Tatsumi. Like they're two of the best, obviously. But I just don't get that same buzz for this year that I felt the last 2 years around this time.
Yes. Agreed. So the tournament is going to wrap up on the 12th and on the 13th of August in Kirkenhall. Two back-to-back shows. Semifinals, like we said, Rika Tatsumi versus Yuki Kamifuku and Miyu Yamashita versus Yuki Arai. And on the 13th, we are going to have the final. Yes. And now, of course, we are going to take a look at the G1 Climax as it stands right now, Dylan, with 12 shows gone. On the weekend, while I was on my way back from Hamburg to my home place here, I watched the show from Aichi in the train, and this actually was the best attended G1 Climax show with 3,545 people in attendance in Nagoya, with Hiroshi Tanahashi and his air guitar drawing a lot of fans into the arena. But it was definitely not the best show of the tournament. It has a rating of 5.24 on Cage Match. And yeah, there really is no match on this card that, in my opinion, really stood out. Main event was okay. The Shingo Takagi versus Tama Tonga time limit draw was dramatic in the end of the match, but for the most part didn't really garner a lot of interest from me. Zack Sabre and Shane Haste was okay. Everything else on this card pretty much lags behind. Not really G1 material.
I talked about Night 10. Yeah, like you said, I thought it was interesting. This was the highest attended. I mean, Tanahashi and Goto...
Yeah,
two classics. I guess you can't beat them. At least, or you know, you
that's
can't
really unfortunate for New Japan Pro Wrestling to be. I mean, this was a successful show, though. So that, of course, on that given day was a success for New Japan Pro Wrestling, but it's not a good story, not a good look when these two that are really not the main focus players anymore are those who get the best attendance out of any show.
That's true. I mean, we talked about Night 9 and how that was not as much as you would have wanted overall for that. But this one bounced back in a big way. Even this show on the 12th did a very good number for Hiroshima. Today did over 2,000 fans, which is, that's very good, especially for this.
Their best Hiroshima attendance in a long time.
Yeah, and for something that is this was not presented as a major show, you know, like that. Like, no offense to Shingo and Finlay, but I mean, you're going with a match that hasn't really had any build to it or anything, but it all worked out. And the thing is, a lot of the talk is how terrible C and D Block is, but they have the best attendances. Because they put all the old stars in D Block.
Yes.
And like Naito and Goto and Tanahashi are all in D. So, like, obviously, that's going to carry a lot of weight. There, which is very interesting. But yeah, 10th, there's really nothing to say. What did I rate as the best match? Just for giggles on Night 10. I guess I would say Shingo and Tonga would have been the best match.
I liked Zach versus Shane Haste too.
That is worth mentioning. The absolute worst slap exchange of all time in that match. Shane Haste, I said it on the Patreon, Chikara Momota would cringe at the stuff Shane Haste was throwing out. And that totally took me out of that match. But otherwise, a good effort from them.
Some banner days for TMDK with Mikey Nichols today doing the worst European clutch in history as well.
That was not better days. That was equally bad days overall. But the main event was pretty good. Like, you know, the greatest hits version. Like, Tanahashi's just been cruising to being the top guy of D-Block overall. Just always having these three-star matches. Like,
Goto is really suffering in this tournament.
He's injured.
Wow. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he's a guy, and that's another thing that hurt D Block. Mm-hmm. If he was at his peak, you know, we would have probably a lot better matches.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah, on this show too, Tetsuya Naito defeated Alex Covelin in a nothing match, and after the match, actually, he went out to say that anyone can participate. This is not G1, and he went to elaborate on this one. He said, the same goes for Shane Haste, who I fought the last time, and the same with Alex Covelin, who I fought today. I honestly wondered why he was included in the G1. But as far as Shane is concerned, he's beaten me, and even Covelin today, he's definitely a contender. On the other hand, Naito said, then why did I say that? I think the G1 is the strongest tournament in the middle of the summer, where only selected wrestlers can participate. He reiterated his doubts about the tournament, which has 32 competitors, the most in its history. Tetsuya Naito, Team Eastern Lariat on this topic, Dylan.
Man, what a rambling promo he had.
I think he was just getting out his thoughts after the match. Not really great train of thought. Everything sucks. This guy beat me. This guy's pretty good too. But overall, nah.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, yeah. We can say, I mean, the Haste and Naito match was good. I thought that was Haste's real step up moment, I would say, in the tournament. The match that he finally stepped up in. Coughlin. Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely what happened. So, right. Yeah, that was the show for Amaichi. We went on to Takamatsu City on August 1st with an attendance of 1,559. Also, right, like really not a good attendance, but this show didn't have a lot either, except for a few matches. I mean, okay, yeah, let's look at this. First, Goleo defeated Kaito Kiyomiya, and that's one of the topics I wanted to get in before we get into anything. He defeated Kaito Kiyomiya, and when Kaito laid down and suffered the loss, it dawned on me that, pretty much I rated Kaito Kiyomiya too high. I had my expectations up too high. That sometimes happens with me. On this show, I really like to see my guys win and want that to happen so bad, and ultimately I get disappointed. I was very disappointed with him losing this one. Didn't expect it to going in. But yeah, that's Kaito Kiyomiya's story pretty much in this tournament. He's not where most fans and observers would have wanted him to be.
There's nothing wrong with that, but I'm surprised at you specifically right now for that, because out of everyone, you are the person that always like talks bad about Noah and everything they do. You're not interested really in anything they do, but yet you still valued him despite those same feelings.
Yes, I valued him very much because of two reasons. This is not pro wrestling Noah, this is New Japan pro wrestling, and you could see how the fans get behind Kaito Kiyomiya every time he is in the ring. We said it when he was facing Shota Umino, he was able to get the fans behind Shota Umino without being a nasty heel. When he was facing Gabe Kidd, he was this valiant babyface. Fans were getting behind him so much. And then there was the possibility of Kaito Kiyomiya facing Katsuhiro Okada in the semifinals of the tournament, which I think a lot of people, including me, made believe that he was going to be one of the main focused players in his block. He still has the chance to advance, but I don't think that those are very high when we look at the block A standings in a bit. So yeah, that's the reasons why I thought he would be much higher in this tournament.
And he's a great wrestler. Like, you know, he's arguably been the best person in the tournament, just in terms of in-ring quality. Like, he's been around that level, as he always is. You know, I have my thoughts. Obviously, like, the match Tiki was a nothing match, ultimately, like, nothing to write home about or anything like that. But, you know, like I said, I pretty much laid out exactly how it played out in the last episode with this.
Yes.
So I was surprised to see how negative the reaction is, because here's the thing with this. If he had just beat Hikuleo, that would have been stupid, because there would be no drama in the last day of A block. Like, he had to lose to have any. Sonata, we already know, is advancing at the end of the day. Like that, there's no drama in the first spot. Like, if he had won, he would have won the block. So why would he win realistically on this show?
Yeah, that's right. That's completely right. But still, though, Kiyomiya losing to Hikuleo, I don't think is what a lot of people would have expected from this tournament.
And I don't think that it's worth. I mean, like I said, I'll have my final say on this after night 13. Like, when we have our next show at the end of the day, like, I'll have my full thoughts, because, like we were saying, I mean, well, like I said, we'll talk about the standings. We'll wrap that all up. But it's not like he got eliminated from the tournament. You know, like, I do think there was a little bit of an overreaction when, like, this was the only logical outcome. It makes literally no sense for him to beat Hikuleo. I mean, I wish, like I said, ideally it would have been someone good that he had lost to instead of Hikuleo, but that's just how the schedule played out. Like, that was the stupid thing, working the Hikuleo into the spot, which we're going to talk about B block in a second. There's another case of that, which we'll talk about as well, that I think with better scheduling, but the same stuff happening, I think it would have. Like, the reaction wouldn't be as negative as this one.
I think so, yeah. I think so.
But nothing much.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Next one was pretty funny, because it definitely was Great Okan's best match in the tournament.
Yeah.
And it's so funny that he was motivated in that situation where he actually got a win. And while in most of his matches where he lost, he really looked bad. The one victory he had over El Fantasma was a pretty solid match, but this one really was his best outing so far. Tells you a lot about this guy and where he is, I think, with his mindset.
I kind of mentioned at the start of the tournament, he was a guy I looked at on paper. He's a guy we all think, oh, like a new player they can push. But if you actually look at, again, you have to look at the scheduling a lot of times with New Japan. Mm-hmm. He had, like, no real main events. Like, in the whole tournament. Like, he didn't have any main event options. Like, even people like Finley and Tama Tonga had much more than him at the end of the day. He was in the same spot, basically, as Yoshiashi, even in the standings, as he is now. And, I mean, Yoshiashi did a great job, I thought, this match, actually. You know, the crowd was kind of dead after the first match. Like, they weren't very hyped about that. But he got the fans into it again, which, as you would expect for somebody of his caliber. And they had a good match. Okan wrestled well. Like you said, he hasn't been very good throughout the tournament. He's not a guy, when I just watch him wrestle and I look at him, I don't see a star player in him, to be perfectly honest with you, or that he really deserves more than he's getting. But it's just one of those things where you want new guys at the end of the day. But it feels like he's definitely been surpassed by the A-Block guys.
Absolutely, yes, the A-Block guys. Renarita defeated Chase Owens. They had this story throughout the tournament that Chase Owens is this great veteran that is able to is able to show it to the youngsters. In this match, he told Renarita that he's still a young boy. Yeah, fine
he
thing.
He proved him.
He proved himself. Yes, he lost to Renarita.
No, Ren proved him wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not just a young boy. He beat Chase Owens.
Finally got his first victory.
No, he had won earlier in the tournament.
Did he? Didn't he have two Tamil draws?
No, he beat... oh, yeah, you're right. No, you're right, you're right.
First
victory. Yeah, first win. He showed him. Chase Owens. He proved us wrong. I mean, a fine match. Like, it's not like there's anything you can say is, like, terrible about it, but it just wasn't anything you want to hang your hat on,
I mean, we had two more... We had a couple of more of these matches, pretty much. Like, El Fantasma beat Taichi, 14 minutes, fine stuff. Fantasma is going to challenge for the King of Pro Wrestling, probably. Tangaloa defeated Will Ospreay. The match, it really was a nothing match, and only the result makes it somewhat special, with Tangaloa getting a count-out victory over Ospreay. And the main event wasn't anything special, too. Okada defeated Kenta. This match went 19 minutes. 19 minutes, and nothing happened.
Look who's in the match.
Yeah. Dropping the kendo stick and all the sticks.
Yeah. I had no expectations, and they met them.
Two best matches of the show, Zanada beat Gabe Kidd. I think that Gabe Kidd, throughout the tournament now, has really found a good middle ground of the gimmick that he's supposed to display. At first, he really went all in with all of the shenanigans that he could get into the match. And now he has found a nice middle ground of cheating while still being a good wrestler in his matches. And I thought he was a good heel against Zanada. So that was a pretty solid match. The best match of the show, obviously, Yoda Tsuji defeating Shota Umino in a victory that probably wasn't expected anymore, because with the layout of the Reiwa Three Musketeers, they told us that they are all going to draw with one another, and this looked like it would go the time limit once again. But then, Dylan, of course, Yoda Tsuji brought out the Gene Blaster to pin Shota Umino and get a victory over him, and now Yoda Tsuji is at 5 points, while Shota Umino stands at 6 points at this point that we're talking about it. And this, I think this match was very good. I enjoyed it a lot. I thought that Yoda Tsuji once again proved that he definitely is the guy that they are looking for. I thought that Shota Umino looked good here too. Shota excelled in all the situations where he could implement his fast-paced style, while Yoda Tsuji, of course, brought the energy and the power to the match. So these two have pretty good chemistry with one another.
Yeah, I definitely thought this was, a good showing for both men. I didn't think it was anything super great or anything like that. I thought it was a good match.
I think I can agree with the rating that we have on Cage Match. It has a good rating with 7.99, little below 8, and that's, I think, where it should be.
Yeah, and I would probably be even a little bit lower, to be honest. I thought, like most other matches in the tournament, it was not built well. It was just not a lot happened, and then when it got good, it got great by the end.
Yeah, what's about this match structure? I mean, we've said it a couple of times. Okada is one of the examples of that. There is just a lot of nothing in the first 10 minutes of all these matches, and yeah, why do you think that is?
That's kind of been going on for years now. Like, Okada was kind of the
usually
one.
Usually it would be the first 15, yes, I agree. I think it's getting more visible with more guys being in the tournament, and with the time limits being shorter, you'd think that, okay, the time limits, 10 minutes less of time for each match, and so they have to get going. And we saw that with Taichi and Okada, for example. But for the most part, these matches still drag on for a long, long time.
And a match where, like, Gabe Kidd and Kaito is one that everybody points to, where that was something very unique in the midst of the tournament overall. People really love them some Gabe Kidd right now. I saw a lot of positive stuff because he was kind of like one of the worst guys to me for a while. But then after that Kaito match, the last two matches, he's
something seems clicked. Like much like I said, he found his groove.
Yeah, and I thought Sonata did his normal solid self here. I thought here too, he's a fine. I think he has been a really interesting person in the tournament. In all likelihood, going undefeated in the block, unless they want to give Chase his gold watch.
That would be so horrendous for this block, because from day one, Chase Owens said, "I don't care about any of these victories because I just need to beat the champ."
So that plays directly into his story.
Yeah.
See, so I mean, okay, if they want to do that, I think it's clear to me Sonata is losing this title in October, and they're setting that up. No, not to him. But I think it's interesting because they really don't do undefeated blocks. You know, even with Okada, he's never done that in the tournament, which is very interesting that they've chosen Sonata.
I think that tells you that they think that he really needs it.
And it's good. That's not a negative, in my opinion. I've always said that I think this champion should always be booked.
Absolutely. Strong. Yeah. And with four blocks, there is nothing wrong with having one block that's decided very early. That's just what happens in league formats a lot. I mean, if you can see it in football, that league systems can be decided like five or six fixtures before the final one. And that's what we have with block A.
Exactly, and I think it's good, actually. And I think he's done a fine job. I don't think he's had a great tournament or anything like that, but he's been all right. And as the champion, you obviously want him to be the leader of the pack, and he really isn't. But still, I think you can't say they haven't given him a chance as champion. Let's put it that way. They've given him everything, pretty much in this tournament. Whether he delivers... Right now, I would say he probably hasn't to the level that he should, but still, you have to give them credit for at least trying. And, you know, like you said, Okada, Kenta, you know, it was what it was at the end of the day overall.
So then, day 12 of the G1 Climax from Hiroshima, you mentioned it. A little bit over 2,000 fans in attendance. This show, I really liked this show top to bottom, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I thought there was a lot of good stuff. This might be one of the better shows of the tournament.
Yeah, I agree with that. I had four matches all... I think this might have been the first show where I had three matches all over 3.5 stars. You know, I thought Hinari and Ishii was a great hard-hitting match, or a very good
hard-hitting match. I put it on Twitter. This was the best version of the guys running into each other match of the tournament. We've seen a couple of tries with this. We talked about the Tomohiro Ishii and Shingo Takagi match not really hitting with us. The Ishii and Kingston match was, of course, great and a great standout. For me, though, I thought that Hinari and Ishii brought some special intensity to this one from the first moment on where they landed the shoulder block. I thought this one was all action. I was completely sold on this match. Was so happy that Hinari got the victory. I went all in with this match.
Yeah, I really liked it. I think that Hinari's been an interesting guy in the tournament because I feel like a lot of the times he's really been uninteresting and not very impressive. But then you look at when he pops, mm-hmm. The first night versus Mikey, I thought was a really standout match.
Yeah.
And then this one was another good one. So it's like when he gets there, he gets there. It's just he's kind of an up and down type of dude. And Ishii's, again, always consistent. He's always trying to carry his best to carry this block to whatever he can get out of it. And he did a great job here, as he always does. I thought Goto and Cobb was a great match.
Goto brought out a Sunset Flip power bump with his rib injury. So you got to give it to him.
Yes, the Kaiten one of his big moves in the past, unlocking it now at this big moment. He needed it to stay alive in the tournament, so why not bring out the big guns with the Kaiten here? I just love that they're using he's really tapping into a Tanahashi-esque sense of psychology right now with this rib injury. I think it really wasn't working for him for most of the tournament, but in this match it finally clicked, and hopefully he can repeat the same on the last night as well, because I thought this was his best match easily, Goto's in the tournament, as well as Cobb too. He had a very great performance. Shingo and Finley was the main event. I thought they did a really nice job
Yep.
Each other, good hard-hitting type of match again. We saw a big move with the powerbomb through the table. The outside, you had a lot of action, good intensity. I've really enjoyed both of these guys' tournament, actually. Finley hasn't been, like, you know, the top wrestler, like, in terms of star ratings or whatever. But I like his gimmick. I think his vibe works very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say, like, he has... From day one, when they had him as the Bullet Club leader, I think that boosted his confidence so much that from day one on, he carried himself like a true star. Even though I don't think that he's there yet. I don't think that people are really registered that they are going with him strong. But the Bullet Club shirt I saw is still the most selling shirt in New Japan Pro Wrestling. So they must have done something wrong with Finlay, with adding him, with adding new blood to the Bullet Club. And I think that even though he's not having the best matches, I think, much like you said, his presence is really there.
Yeah, and he's a good worker. You know, and the block is not set up to be a good block, really, outside of like two guys. And we've seen some guys step up and some guys not step up in C block. But I think he's one of the ones that would say has done a good job. And he peaked. He got over the average rating of 3 stars with this good match in the tour. And Shingo's been one of the best. You could easily argue he's been the best worker of the whole tournament. He's actually the highest star rating average person heading into the last night. Is Shingo.
Yeah, I thought this was his best match to this point.
Shingo's best match?
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, I'd have to go through it, but I can buy it. Like I said, I think he's had all good matches. I don't think
all good matches, definitely. Let's go through it. Like, the Kingston match was fine. Henare, also pretty solid, but too long. Then the Ishii match, we talked about that. He beat Nichols in under 10 minutes.
That was a great match. Like, well, that was his
right.
Best match
that was to me. Yeah. Okay. Yes, I can buy that too. Yeah.
Yeah. That was my favorite match of his. Mm-hmm. I agree with you about the other ones though. Like, I would say, you know, like pretty much what you said. We're kind of on the same page. But again, like Shingo and Ishii not hitting, I think we have to like admit it's a big part of that is they're victims of their own standards. You know, like that was still like a 3 3/4 star match to me. It's just I agree with your thoughts on it because obviously you want that to be the match of the year. And like I said, I think I said in that match, I thought that was probably one of their better matches together, honestly, mm-hmm. outside of their first one.
It, yes.
Yeah, and so I think Shingo's had a great tournament overall. I stand by that rating. I think the ratings are standing it out, and I thought he had a good match here with Finlay again. I had that at 3 3/4 as well. So, but the best match on the show was actually Naito and Zach to me.
Yeah,
for today.
We talked about that briefly before the show. This actually might be my favorite match of the tournament. I actually watched it twice because I couldn't believe that this match went 18 minutes 30 seconds. It completely flew by. I thought that these two, this was by far Naito's best performance in this tournament so far. Naito finally has shown up, much like he always does, very late in the tournament. He showed up and he and Zack Sabre brought some great intensity. Zack Sabre worked over Tetsuya Naito's arm a lot in this match. Naito was able to bounce back with a lot of his offense, really creative stuff in a lot of moments in this match, particularly, of course, the finish where he transitioned from a tornado DDT into a small package. I thought that looked so flawless. Most of the match actually looked so flawless while still being very intense. And these two clearly bringing out their rivalry they faced a lot of times in years past. Remember, like 2 years ago, Zach was the one responsible for Naito dropping out of the tournament. So they brought up that in this match. Much like I said, great rivalry. Just overall, probably one of the best matches of the tournament.
Yeah, I would say definitely up there. You know, if you said it was the best, I wouldn't argue with you there. I said it before. There's a few matches that are kind of in a particular stratosphere, like that 4 1/4 match. I don't think there's been any match of the year level match, and I wouldn't put this as that either, to be honest.
No.
But it was among the best. There's a few. There's a handful, 5 or 6 maybe, that are at that 4 1/4 level to me that are like really standout great matches that you should check out. And this was one of them. You know, I thought the Ishii and Kingston match was up there.
Yeah.
Osprey and Okada, you know, you would look at, or I would look
Osprey
at least.
Taichi.
Okada Taichi was definitely up there. Kaito and Umino as well. Like that was that same show. That was night five. That was a great match. Osprey and Yoshihashi as well would be the other one. So that's good five or six matches that I would say are all up there. And this is right there. And it may very well be my favorite at the end of the tournament. Hopefully when we get to the serious business by the end with the quarterfinals and all of that, I hope we can get a big, big match. I think that's what this tournament's missing. Because a lot of times people will gravitate towards that. I bet there are some people now that will say that Naito had a great tournament. Because of this one great match. But we know better. We watched all these matches at the end of the day. But
I will go on and say that Mikey Nichols had a far better tournament than Tetsu Naito.
Yes. I mean, that's not even debatable.
Not up for a debate, no.
Yeah. Like,
but it sounds silly, but yeah, it's the truth.
And Naito's been struggling for a while now, for me, at least. But he's always good for that. Like, always good for that big match. And they're setting him up. Him and Tanahashi have excellent chemistry historically. They had one of the best matches last year and the year before that in G1. So can they do it again and pull out something with all the stops to it? We'll have to see. That's overall, that could kind of save his tournament. But that was a great match. Naito and Zach, kudos to them. I thought they did a great job overall. And everything you said was true. So both good for them. And Zach also jumping over the 3-star mark to tie for the lead. last night.
How about that? Yes. So that are the three shows that we have. We go into the final stretch of this tournament in Osaka, back to back on Saturday and Sunday with Block A and Block B. Then Yokohama on August 8 with Block C and Hamamatsu on August 9. And we get all the qualifiers for the quarterfinals that are about to take place in Funabashi on August 10. So, Dylan, the standings as they are right now. Let's first look at Block A. They've assembled this in a very interesting way with a lot of time draws and a double count out. So, Zanada, we said it, he is running away in this block with 12 points, 6-0 right now. And then there is a situation below that with Hikuleo, Shota Umino, and Kaito Kiyomiya all at 6 points. Gabe Kidd, Yudatsuji at 5, and Chase Owens and Ren Narita at 4. So, the final day of that block is Zanada and Chase Owens, Ren Narita and Kaito Kiyomiya, Shota Umino and Hikuleo and Yudatsuji and Gabe Kidd. And you pretty much on the last show already laid it out. So please once again reiterate, Dylan, what is going to happen in this block?
Yeah, they set it up perfectly for what they wanted, I think. Basically, they set it up to where now Hikuleo and Umino are wrestling. And we have to remember that Umino and Kaito had a draw earlier. So yes. They set it up to where Narita is fighting for his Three Musketeers mate. To advance.
It's not a mate, actually, but yes.
third mate, or first mate, or whatever. You know, like, they're all pirates, right?
They're pirates, but they don't like each other.
There's been no sign that they have personal heat, though. Narita and Umino, at least. So I will call them, especially if they end up, if this ends up playing out like that, to where Narita saves his tournament, then I think they will be friends. I actually think that would be a kind of a good spot for them.
Yeah.
If they actually united for, like, actually for real, I think that would be a good faction to have. I mean, you can't do that with Tsuji, like, now because he's already in LIJ, but have Umino and Narita as a tag team, I think that would be a good spot for them, in my opinion. But regardless, this to me, they could go one of two ways here. There's been so much negativity about Kaito, but actually, they can still get to where everybody wants them to go,
which
is why I'm hesitant to write this off completely, because like I said, to me, there's no good explanation for why he would have beaten Hikuleo, like, just with the way the standings play out, because that would have ended the night, like, the whole show would be meaningless if that happened on night 13, and they weren't going to do that. Now you have this to where you actually have stakes. They made it, they could easily get where they want, so here's how they would need Kaito to get there. You need Kaito to beat Narita, which I definitely think is possible. You know, like, Narita has been far from a featured player, which kind of puts you on upset alert a little bit that he needs something to hang his hat on, which he hasn't really had. He needs to beat Narita, and Shota and Hikuleo need to have a draw if that happens.
Yeah.
Now, that the thing is, if they do that, that goes back to a point I made on multiple shows ago where I mentioned how everybody's talking about, oh, they need to have less people, blah, blah, blah. But you're arguing a point that doesn't exist in their heads, because that shows, if they put Hikuleo in a draw, that shows that this tournament is not about the fans or best having the best matches. Like, at the end of the day, like, you do not put Hikuleo in a 20-minute time limit draw.
No.
If that is your goal at the end of the day. But it would have to work out that way for Kaito to advance. Because otherwise, they'd have
Hikuleo's
to end up...
longest match was 12 minutes so far.
Exactly. And he's not been good in any of his matches. So I would say. The Tsuji match was all right. I would say that was probably
his
best.
It was his longest, actually.
Yeah, so that was his best one against Tsuji. But, you know, they can actually, if they wanted to, they could get to a scenario where they do the draw and then Narita beats Kaito anyway and Tsuji wins, which would put everybody at 7.
Exactly. I was just going to say, they could also, like, this would be a very convoluted scenario. Yeah. They could have Narita and Kaito, as well as Shota and Hikuleo, have that two matches end in no contest. Well, Yonatsuji wins his match, and suddenly he would advance.
That's another one of those, kind of like we talked about earlier in the tournament, where they selectively use what they wanted to do.
Yes.
You could call it a draw, or you could call it a no contest. Will they get points, or will they not? That definitely will not happen. But you could also just have the tie and have Tsuji still be able to advance, because mm-hmm. if Umino and Tsuji and Hikuleo all like go in, you have a draw, but Hikuleo beat Tsuji, but Tsuji beat Umino. So it's a three-way draw they'd have to figure out some weird scenario for, which we don't know how they would determine something like that, a three-way tie.
I wouldn't rule it out, because it's been talked about quite often now that there would be a decision match on the Funabashi show then for advancement in Block A. That would be the one to face the winner of Block D then. That would be high stakes.
And they could do that with Umino and Kaito. If they both won.
Nothing wrong about that.
Yeah, but what if it was a three-way tie, though, between Tsuji, Hikuleo, and Umino?
I think they would do a three-way.
Okay. Yeah, we don't know. I'm not disagreeing with you. I don't know, you know, what they're going to do. But yeah, like, the thing is, we don't have the evidence that shows what they would do in a scenario like that. And it's very unlikely it would go to that. Like, the easiest scenario is one of Umino beats or Hikuleo beats the other, like, because they will advance if that happens. And if Umino wins, Narita just beats Kaito, and that saves Umino to advance. Like, that's the easiest scenario, is that Umino beats Hikuleo and Narita beats Kaito. But the only thing, because if all things were equal, I would still be pretty confident about Kaito actually advancing, to be honest.
That's the thing. I've had my stakes too high for Kaito, but I don't think that he really is the one to go out before the quarterfinals.
Here's the thing that makes me doubt, like, actually throws a wrench of doubt in my eyes, even, to be honest with you, is what happens on B Block. Because for them to get to Kaito and Okada, Okada would have to lose to Loa.
It's absolutely, yes.
And they could do that, but why Loa? And that, you know, that's the big question. Like, why Loa? Like, that would beat him.
Yeah.
Why couldn't it have been Yoshihashi? Like, if they were going to do that, Loa doesn't gain anything from beating Okada. Like, he's not going to be a singles act, like a feature player.
Nope.
So it would be totally, like, artificial, like, you know, like, to do that, like a total booking decision, no logic behind it, just to points control.
I don't think that it's very likely, to be quite honest, because I think they set this up with Loa defeating Osprey by count out so that you think that he wants to do the same with Okada, and they are going to tease that.
Yeah.
And Okada is going to win in the end, maybe with his sit-down pinfall. My favorite. To make it look like he almost lost to Tangaloa, but still then wins. But
Exactly. Yeah. Like, so, and the only way that can happen is if Kaito and Okada meet in the final, and Kaito's not winning this tournament, my friends. So no. I'm sorry. On this, like, I know a lot of people believed in a lot of stuff with him earlier, but I don't think even the most ardent Noah fan can believe that Kaito is winning the G1 at the end of the day.
I think you can go either way. I think I'm not as confident on Kaito as I was going in, but much like you said, I wouldn't rule it out either. But right now, it looks like Shota Umino is the front runner. But then again, this is G1, and they could easily throw a wrench into that because everybody is now believing in Umino, and Kaito advancing would then be a nice surprise in the end.
And it's actually smart. Like I said, how they did it is smart. That's why I'm kind of confused by the negative reaction, because, like I said, if he had just won, it wouldn't have made it, it wouldn't have made this show interesting. So I was a little surprised to see how negative their reaction was, even if people overvalued him, which I do think is true. Like, not just you, but I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
Like I said, we've people talking about him getting a title shot at the end of the tournament, which was, like, insane. Like, that, he's a mid-card guy.
Why are you calling it insane? I mean,
he's a mid-carder in Noah.
Why not? Zanada isn't that high either.
But Kaito is a mid-carder in Noah.
Yeah,
like
right.
He's not going to be a main eventer in New Japan. He's not a top five guy in his own company. Like, that's been announced by them. I know that.
But once again, this is just not Noah. This is other circumstances that they throw him in, and the fans have really gotten behind him. So I don't know why you call it insane.
But the fans don't matter. It's the company politics.
Well, that's actually pretty bad then.
Well, but what does New Japan, because remember we had this conversation earlier.
We had this conversation. Yeah. I told you they would get a new fresh main event from that. That's it.
But again, they don't want a Noah main event.
Clearly, at the end of the day, they don't. Yes.
And I was talking to somebody on Twitter about this too, about their, somebody was saying, oh, Noah really got the raw end of the deal in the negotiations or whatever. And I told him, I said, look, if you work with Bushiroad, this is the end game. Always. There is no even, or New Japan doesn't owe Noah anything. Like, why would you think that? That's the history of this company working with other promotions. It's that they never get, it's never equal. Like, why would they start now? For somebody who's a geek, like, who has no fan support, like, in the grand scheme of things.
That's not true, actually. He has a lot of fan support.
He's over to the crowds in the promotion because he's a great wrestler, but he's not a star.
Yeah, but that's not the fans' fault. The fans
The fans
take to him whenever they get behind him. The fans take to him.
Well, why was it told that he has no fans in Noah?
Yeah, that's the insane part. That's not true.
And I'm not the one who said that.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not the one, but it is true. You look at his drawing power, they've gone up since he's left in Noah.
Did they?
Yeah. Their two biggest shows in Corfin.
But still, though, remember when he won the N1 last year? That was a great, great show and the great role.
Oh, man, what a great match that was, too. What happened after that?
I mean, it's really not his fault that how have gone down. So yes, I don't know if you can point to that, actually.
Everybody knows that. Like that it's not his fault. Like, any logical person can say it's not his fault. But it's still true at the end of the day. You don't get... And why did we get there? We could go through... The thing is, if we go down his history, there's going to be a dozen things we talk about. Oh, remember when he had the beer poured in his head after that amazing main event and that great draw we talked about by Fujita? Remember
What it comes down to is that this is one of the most frustrating stories of the last 5 years in Japanese pro wrestling, because making this guy is so easy.
That's true.
And they are making it so overly complicated that this guy is ever going to achieve something, because they have these weird ideas of what he needs to do and who he needs to lose to before he can go to place X. And they fumble it so much. It's so crazy.
And that's all factual. Like, what everything you said is so true.
Yeah.
But the fact is, it happened.
The fact is, it happened, but it shouldn't have. But here we
are. We can't change the past. And if you run New Japan, why would you have this total loser go over any of your main event stars?
Yeah, that's ultimately what it is. Yes.
Exactly. And again, maybe they get there. We don't know that yet. And that's why I'm holding off of any outrage against, yeah, against him, because who's to say they don't just do that? They don't have Tangaloa beat, kind of. That's my real – that's the real thing I have to jump over, because them going to a draw, I can totally believe in him advancing. But Loa beating Okada – like, mm-hmm, that is
a, that's really tough.
Yeah, why wouldn't they have just used somebody else to get a big rub? Like, because that would have meant something for. Imagine if Tai Chi had been in that spot.
But they sometimes just do that. Remember, couple of years ago. Oh, it was a long time ago. Actually, I think it was 2014. I'm looking at right now. At the final day of Block Action, Hiroshi Tanahashi faced Davey Boy Smith Jr. And Tanahashi would have advanced, and Davey Boy had nothing going for him, but he beat Tanahashi on the final day. And they never, ever brought that up, and they never, ever followed up, and Davey Boy Smith Jr. gained nothing from that. And so why not Tangaloa this time?
Why not Tangaloa? That should be the thing of the tournament. What is the catchphrase of the tournament? Why not Tangaloa? Yeah.
But let's look at Block B. So
yeah.
Okada, 10 points. Ospreay, 8. Taichi and Tangaloa, 6. And El Fantasmo, also 6. But I think Ospreay beat Fantasmo, right?
No, that's the match on the last night.
Oh, that's the match. Oh, yeah, that's the match on the last night. But Ospreay lost to both Taichi and Tangaloa. That's the story here. Right. So, yeah. Ospreay. Yeah, in the story, if Taichi and Tagaloa get a victory, Ospreay definitely needs to win the match with El Fantasmo, and that's definitely going to happen. They just threw a wrench in there with Taichi getting the win over Ospreay early, and Tangaloa upsetting him with the countout. So, yeah, it's Okada and Ospreay.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter about the others. Like, because if Fantasmo beats Ospreay, he'd go over Ospreay anyway. So
the thing about it, Dylan, Ospreay's victory over Okada would be completely meaningless if Okada wouldn't lose this match.
You know, that's the weird thing about this. This is something I've always disagreed with, but it's something they've done in the past as well. I mean, the most noteworthy version of it was Honma. After he got his huge win, they immediately had him lose. Is you give Ospreay the biggest win of his career, and then you immediately have him lose to Tangaloa afterwards. I mean, I don't think that's a good thing at the end of the day.
They really have two stories in these tournaments. There's there's one guy, or actually they have three stories. Guy A has a losing streak early and then wins a lot.
Yes.
Guy B wins a lot early. In this instance, it's Jeff Cobb. And then he loses a lot.
Yes.
And the third story is Guy gets a big victory in the middle of the tournament and then once again loses. That's the stories they have.
Yes, and they've done it again. They've done all three of those.
Done it again, yes.
Yes, in this tournament. Four blocks. They're going to have to figure out a fourth story to go to. But yeah, the thing is, this is very simple. Like, Ospreay is going to beat Fantasmo.
Yeah.
Like, that will be the end of that. And to all the rest, pretty much. And Okada, he's already going to advance, so it doesn't matter. It's just a matter of will he be one or two in the block. So I think the easiest state of mind here is just have Ospreay and Okada just win. Like, just not even worry about missed opportunities or who beat who or anything like that. They just win. I think that's the easiest way. I can see Okada getting the win on for Taichi to get some points.
Yeah, why not?
Give a little bit of momentum. I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, it really doesn't matter. Same with Kenta and Hashi. I, as a fan, I hope Hashi beats Kenta because one person is so much better than the other, performance-wise, in this tournament.
But wouldn't you love for Kenta to get a tag title shot, Dylan?
Oh, that's true. Who would be his partner?
I don't know.
Yeah, he doesn't really have anybody he's matched up with.
Who even is left in the original Bullet Club?
That's true. Yeah, see, so Yoshihashi will probably win that then. I
guess because Kenta has no friends.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he has no friends. That's why that's the ultimate goal of G1 is to prove that Kenta has no friends.
Yes. Okay, Block C. On the final day,
this
we
is the
have...
most complicated one of all.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to let you take the lead. We have Kingston and Finlay, Shingo and Evil, Tonga and Hinari, and Ishii and Mikey Nichols. This is probably the easiest one. Ishii is going to get the victory to get to 4 points. But man, he's very low in this tournament. Not from his from his wrestling, but they don't really see anything in him.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, there was rumors before that he was on the cutting block, really.
They could tell a story around that he's really not able to get the victories, so he could be out.
Which would be a terrible, tragic
decision, yes.
Yeah. So we do not want that. at the end of the day. But yeah, I mean that match doesn't matter anyway. She and Nichols, I mean, you know, like I like their tournaments. Both of them have really impressed, but they're both eliminated at this point.
Hinari is going to eliminate Tama Tonga from competition.
Yes, probably. Exactly. Yeah.
And then it's down to the two matches I mentioned, Kingston and Finlay and Takagi and Evil.
Yeah, Finley's beating Kingston to advance. I'm almost certain of that. They're not going to leave Finley on the chopping block after all of this. And then it'll come down to Shingo versus Evil, which is kind of I think where everybody kind of saw it anyway. Or at least in my predictions, this is basically how I had it playing out. Was Finley would advance and then Shingo and Evil on the last night.
Mm-hmm.
Shingo has been the guy that lost a lot early and then rose up later.
That's true, and he has 7 while Evil has 8, so Evil will try everything to get a double count out or a double DQ out of Shingo Takagi. And that's the thing, what I told you about the House of Torture early in this tournament. You fear that Evil might pull that off, but ultimately it's going to be Shingo that goes over.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Like, they've set it up to where this match will have meaning for the standings, and you could go either way, like if they really wanted. But I think the best call, and the one that I think will happen, is that Shingo will just win here. And then, like you said, they'll kind of play around with it, similar to what you talked about with Loa and Okada, to where they're kind of teasing something and then having the babyface triumphantly overcome to get to the quarterfinals.
Yeah,
like,
so it wasn't so complicated overall.
And the thing is, they just have the most people alive, because like half the block is still, like, you know, Kingston, Tonga, Evil, Shingo, they're all alive. You got 5 guys still here, just 5 guys in C block. But it really plays off to where it's very simple, like, you know, overall.
All right, then we got one block left, block D, where it's Jeff Cobb is on top of the block, because he beat both Tetsuya Naito and Zack Sabre Jr. They all have 8 points. Then we have Tanahashi and Goto at 6, Shane Haste, Alex Coverland, and Toru Yano at 4. Tanahashi faces Naito, Goto faces Zack Sabre Jr., Jeff Cobb faces Shane Haste, and Toru Yano and Alex Coverland. Toru Yano and Coverland doesn't matter. Cobb and Shane Haste can matter. I think Shane Haste is getting the victory here. Then we have Goto and Zack. I think Goto has had a winning streak lately, but I think Zack Sabre is going to get the victory here. And then
Goto had a really winning streak. He just lost to Coughlin and Tanahashi back to back.
Didn't he? Let's see. Goto beat Shane. Oh, yeah, not a winning streak, but actually he got some victories, to be quite honest. Yes.
Not a victory streak. Yeah, because like his story has been an injury angle throughout the tournament. Yeah. So I was wondering, like, what are you talking about? Winning streak.
Yeah, so Zack beating Goto would propel him to 10 points. And then Naito would need to beat Tanahashi to win the block. What do you think is the most likely scenario here?
I think Goto beats Zack. I think that will set up a TV title shot in the future. And because the thing is, he beats Goto, then Zack needs to get a tag title shot.
Yes.
So I don't think there's no reason for him to get a tag title shot. So I think Goto will win.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cobb will be Haste.
Sounds likely. Cobb doesn't even need to beat Haste to advance in that scenario, actually.
I guess you could have Haste win. That would be an interesting story, because that's kind of a similar angle to Narita and Umino.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have Haste actually win that, but then Goto still wrecks it all. What happens if Goto, Haste, and Tanahashi all win?
Because Goto, then Haste, and Tanahashi.
But the thing is, you would have a 5-way tie. Goto, Zack, Cobb, Tanahashi, and Naito. So nobody...
Haste is at 4, actually.
Haste doesn't matter. I'm saying Goto, Zack, Tanahashi, and Naito.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, 5-way tie. What would they do then? Because we talked about the triple threat earlier.
Yeah, do a 5-way. Let's go.
5-way?
Good old 0-1 Fire Festival lineup there.
Sure. But obviously, I think Naito is for sure beating Tanahashi. Like, there's no reason for Tanahashi. Yeah, exactly. And the other one, it just depends on how you want these blocks to play out, pretty much. Do you want Naito in the A spot, or do you, or like the D1 spot or the D2 spot, pretty much, because he beat Zach but lost to Khan. So that's really the main point.
Actually, with Zanada winning block A, you'd want Naito in the second spot of block D.
And that would mean Cobb would win. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And I got to tell you, I'm kind of getting a vibe about Okada in this tournament. I had said at the start that Okada and Naito was the end game for Wrestle Kingdom. And now we kind of all figured it might be Naito winning the tournament. You could do it where Naito wins the title and Okada wins the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
With how you this plays
out. We talked about that very early in the tournament that could be a possibility.
And it's looking like that could be something that you would want to go in there. I could totally see that happening, to be honest, right now.
Yep.
And I mean, that would make the most sense to me. Let's see, Naito would be D1. So you could set some interesting things up, though. Like with this tournament, if you look at the format, you could have a situation where Okada is B1. This really wrecks up a lot of my predictions.
Agreed with mine as well.
So we're kind of in a weird spot with what we thought would happen. But that always happens. Like, nobody's a genius when it comes to the G1 predictions where you get everything right. I got most of the people advancing right. It's just,
I was wrong. Like, Zanada is block A1 is not facing D2. He's facing C2. Yeah, that's weird. Weird setup, yeah.
But he would face Naito on the semifinals.
Yeah, exactly.
You could actually set it up too, where this is what I predicted actually, that Sonata and C2 would be Sonata versus Shingo.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have Sonata beat him, this is exactly how I played it out in my format actually. Sonata would have beaten Hiromu, Tsuji, and then Shingo right in a row, and then face the big boss. Naito he'd have faced all of LIJ. That basically completes his story as champion there. Like, he got through all of LIJ, but he just couldn't overcome Naito in the end, which would make perfect sense. But with B1, if Okada's B1, then that means Okada and Naito in the quarterfinals.
Mm-hmm.
So
Okada and Naito in the quarterfinals. With that, with Okada B1, it would make sense that Okada and Cobb would face once again.
That's not possible. It would have to be Zach. Because Cobb beat Naito.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I guess you could do it. Like you said, he doesn't have to advance. I guess Naito could win and be D1 then, and Cobb would be D2 because he beat Zach.
Right. That would work out.
But Goto also beat Cobb, so that would be a three-way tie. They would have to work that out as well.
Did you say block C was the most complicated?
I guess D has its own complications here. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with D block. To me, like I said, Cobb and Naito. Now this gives you.
But Naito is a lock. Then it's just the question what they want to do. And with like I said, with Okada B1, the match with a story behind it is Okada and Cobb.
Yeah. So that's not possible though. Because he has the win over Naito.
You just said it, that Cobb could be D2.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. But how would they get there from the three-way tie between Goto and
Cobb? That's the question.
Yeah, so that's not possible, again, as I said. So it's, like I said, they've really... I hope that they had this planned out really well. Because,
I think Zach is beating Goto, and Cobb and Naito are both winning.
Okay. Well,
that will work out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's perfect.
Then it would be Cobb winning the block.
That's fine.
Okay. Yeah.
But then, if Cobb wins the block, then Naito's D2.
Yeah. Right.
So that's not possible. I keep telling you.
It is possible, but it doesn't make any sense.
I think it would be. Wouldn't it be cleaner then to just have Okada lose to Loa and have Osprey be B1?
Yes, that would be. That would make block D less complicated.
And it would help you get to Kaito and Okada in the semifinals.
Exactly.
If you want. So Okada and Loa, that's going to be an interesting match. Because that fixes a lot of problems that we all have. If Loa just beats Okada, and then Osprey can be B1. B1 could be Osprey versus Naito, and Cobb versus Kaito. Cobb's an easy person for Kaito to beat at the end of the day. And you know, if Naito's D1, he'd face Kaito in the quarterfinals, which... I don't know about that, if that could work. So, like I said, if Loa beats Okada, I feel like that's the key match to all of this, is how that match plays out. And if Okada will be B1 or B2, that's mm-hmm. going to set off a chain reaction to all the other blocks, pretty much. So I do like – I love how even – he is kind of the main guy, honestly, in the tournament, just not in performance or anything. But I love how they formulated this whole tournament to where Okada controls basically all the blocks on the last night, going into the last night. His match controls stuff for every single block here.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Boy, so this is complicated.
This is going to be interesting. I mean, the tournament itself, we said it with all the guys being in this, with 32 wrestlers in the tournament, there hasn't been a lot of G1 vibe recently,
yeah,
with a lot of matches. But now we're getting to G1 Moth, and now we're getting in deep waters with the G1 Climax, and it's going to be really interesting. And the final nights are definitely going to be where it's at and where a lot of people get their interest up with this tournament. And I think we'll get the feeling by the end of the Block D action.
I do too. I'm actually hopeful, like, when all of this plays out, that it's all going to come together. Because I feel like they... You know, they've set things up to where it's possible things smoothly fit together. It just takes twists that we kind of have to wrap our minds around a little bit, pretty much, for a lot of this. But they've set it up to where it's possible to get to where everybody thinks it should, or it could be the best. It's just we haven't seen it yet. So that's why I kind of said coming into this, I was very surprised at the negative reaction going into this. Because I think they've set it up that you just have to expand your mind a little bit. But it's also possible that they just... Let's say Umino advances from A block, because I think we're both on the same train of thought that Kaito probably won't get eliminated in the quarterfinal at the moment, even with all of the reasons why he could. What would Umino's path be then as A2?
A2 would face D1, would be Jeff Cobb, in our thinking.
Yes, or if Cobb loses, you could have Zach win, and it would be Naito.
Sure.
Which, yeah. Naito and Umino would be a perfect matchup.
All right, yes. Oh, there would be a rematch, actually, too.
Yeah, exactly. So that's another thing to look forward to. I think even that match in A block, if Umino advances, that kind of gives you a clue that Cobb might not make it. Or that Naito may be D1 instead of D2 overall. I still think that the B block is very weird. Like you said, actually, it's funny because C block is kind of the easiest one, even though they had the most people alive to kind of go with. It's like Finley and then either Evil or Shingo.
It just seems so locked that Finlay and Takagi are the ones.
Yeah, and Shingo makes by far the most sense to face Sonata as C2, right. Which we already guaranteed Sonata will be A1, so why? But on the other hand, Evil and Sonata do have a past of their own as well, if they wanted to do that. It's not what I want to do, but they do have a past. As awesome. Like you said, we're getting into G1 math now. This is when things get good, though. Like, even though it sounds goofy as we fumble our way through this, yes. This is when things get fun, though. So I'm actually very excited to see how it plays out. I don't think there's anything locked in stone, right now either. Like I said, it will be interesting, because imagine the conversation we'll have at the end of this if Kaito ends up beating Okada and going to the final.
Yeah,
that'll change everybody's perception of this whole tournament, I think. And even me, I'll be like, okay, they gave him the win that they should have.
And they've done a lot of things differently. That's one of our main talking points about New Japan Pro Wrestling since the beginning of the year. They've done a lot of things differently than in comparison to the much dreaded COVID years.
And even the years before that, they were
even
very
the years before that. Yes, they've done new stuff. They've advanced new guys. They have made it possible for guys to beat those that we wouldn't have thought. I mean, you just have to point at Sanada beating Okada for the world title. That's
that
the ultimate thing that they did, and they might just continue.
And I hope they do. Because I think I want Kaito to get all of these roses that we all want him to have. I'm just like everyone else. I think he's one of the best workers. It's just
he has to struggle a lot.
And that's the thing. It's like I just look at the facts that I look at the stuff. Yes, it shouldn't have happened, but it did happen. I can't change the past. I don't have a time machine, Striga, to where I can change it. But I do. I hope that happens. My personal hope is that happens. But with all of that said, all of that we've talked about, we're going on, we're ending the show soon. Who, if you had to say right now, who do you think is winning this tournament with all of these scenarios that are possible?
I still think it would be Naito.
Yeah, that was both of our predictions before the tournament. That's the easiest answer, I think, overall, the cleanest cut one. But I'm kind of getting that Okada feeling.
The Okada feeling still, definitely.
Yeah, the way it's playing out.
What we said at the beginning, Naito doesn't want the briefcase. Naito doesn't like the briefcase, and he would be the easiest guy to just say, "Ah, screw it. I don't challenge the Wrestle Kingdom. I challenge earlier."
That's the thing we want most, is to get rid of the briefcase, I would say.
Yeah.
Overall, if they do that, then I will definitely be very pleased. But we'll see. Like I said, look at all these scenarios that are still possible going into the last night. We went through them all at the end of the day. But before the show, you said you didn't want to go through them all, but we did.
It seems so complicated, but in the end, it seems fine.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, there's a path there to where this all works out. That's the crazy part, despite all of, people tearing up their predictions already before it happened.
Yes, Dylan, so we made it through. This is it.
This is it. I mean, we're getting to the big time now.
Yeah.
Only one show left of block play and for each block, so that's really four shows. But still, overall, we'll see. My main interest now... I want to see if they have the guts to do a tie, like in some of these, like and how they're gonna.
I think they'll have one,
a three way or four way tie that they could go on to the next night with. I would like to see that actually. I'm a big fan of doing stuff just to so it can happen. Like if it only happens once, it's something you say. Oh well, if they do that, they do a five way tie on this show. And D-Block has a five-way match or whatever. Or however they would get around that. That's something we can look at for the next 10 years. Like 10 right. years from now, you brought up something from 8 or 9 years ago. 8 or 9 years from now, you could say, oh, well, they could do a big tie because they did it in 2023. So I'm a big fan of doing stuff like that.
What you need to do to make these tournaments interesting.
Exactly. And so that's actually my main rooting interest, is to see if somebody getting tied, even if it's like Shota and Kaito, which I definitely think is very possible, that would kind of extend. I think it would be smart on a business level too to do that, because it would extend people's interest in Kaito and Umino, as we could see that they have a lot of hopes and dreams paired with these guys. So you could extend it out to the next show, I think would be great.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So this has been it for our talking points on this show, Dylan. You will once again put stuff up on the Patreon. What can we expect from you on patreon.com/EasternLariat?
Oh yeah, so much going on in the Patreon right now. Not just the G1, but we mentioned it earlier, the Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix. It's going hot and heavy right now, and there's going to be some more shows coming up in another day, a couple days we'll get to as well. N1 victory coverage is coming up as well. I'll do something for Princess Cup when that happens as well later in the month. Toyota Tuesdays, you get Manami Toyota reviews every Tuesday on there, which I put one up yesterday as well. So you get a lot of classic Joshi content on there as well. Like I said, all kinds of stuff coming on. All Japan, whenever they announce the Royal Road, I'll do something for that as well. We're getting very close, and there's no announcements for that particular tournament, but...
Dylan, Zuwama and Ayuagi, are you sensing what I'm sensing? That Zuwama is talking his way into being the champion again?
I can only hope that that doesn't happen.
It would be so horrendous.
Yeah, yes. But I mean,
I can see that because he's done that. But right now would even make less sense than in the instance where he beat Kento Miyahara, because Ayuagi really needs to beat him.
And that's on a smaller show. That's in the Chiba show, right?
You're right, that's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. See, so I can't really see Suwama winning that, but it just depends on what their future plans are. There may be dominoes we can't see with the title right now. I mean, I don't know what those would be, to be honest. But I guess that's kind of giving Suwama the benefit of the doubt for some reason, even though I really agree with you that I don't want that to happen. But I do think that my gut says Ayagi will win, but you can never completely count out Suwama. I just think right now, I think it would make a lot more sense, because they still haven't even... If you're going to do this title reign, you can't end it without doing him versus Kento. In my opinion, like, that would be really illogical from every sense of the that's the main point of all of this, is to see if he can beat Kento or not. And whether he does or doesn't, I think they have to get there at least.
Yep.
Yeah. But I do think, like I said, my gut says Kento is probably the easy favorite for the tournament, at least right now. But we'll see. Again, that's going to be all on the Patreon. We'll talk about all that on there, and it should be a lot of fun overall.
All right. So this has been it for the Eastern Lariat for now. If you made it through our G1 math, thank you all for listening. Yes, thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.